here and there on different speeches, the leader of Iran addressed about the comprehensiveness of the religion of Islam, that Islam is a religion which can be useful for both the other world and this world. So it covers most of the dimensions and the aspects of the practical life of all the people around the world. Okay, Brother Ali, let's get to you and let's get back to the very basic question that is the criteria for calling the religion of Islam the most comprehensive one. What are those criteria?
Yeah, that's a very good question, but we have to see that why are we going to dive into such discussions to see to ask if Islam is a comprehensive religion or not. Basically, there are three viewpoints on the comprehensiveness of religion. One, some believe that Islam is a comprehensive religion and everything that people and humanity and mankind needs can be found in the religion. So the next group or the next viewpoint says that only the rules and regulations of personal worship and, let's say, the viewpoints on the personal affairs of humans have been mentioned in Islam, and Islam has nothing to do with the details. The third one says that Islam has affected all the aspects of one's life, but it is not mentioning all the details of everything. Islam just says the outlines of every issue, but it has a program, it has a say for everything in one's life, but the details are on can come for example the words of the let's say the prophets or the imams of the of the imams who succeeded the prophets, or in the, let's say, based on the basis that we take from Islamic teachings, we can deduce those details for every affair.
And this is what happened, I mean, to the religion of Islam during the centuries. I mean, the role that the theologians, jurisprudents, philosophers, and the scholars, you know, had after the religion of Islam in deducing new rulings after, according to the situation or circumstances of their own lives.
It seems that the third viewpoint is more, let's say, close to reality. Why? Okay. Because we are not saying that, for example, Islam tells us all the formulas that we need for the basic sciences, okay, like mathematics or chemistry or physics, but Islam gives us the general guidelines for every science that all the needs of human being in his life.
And is it at all right to expect a religion like Islam to answer all your questions and solve all your problems? Because nowadays, when we have a financial problem, for example,
if we are familiar with the language of Quran and Islam, it really gives us all the whatever we need for the, let's say, for a prosperous life.
Okay.
But look, when I tell you, for example, in order to find the other person's house, you need to go through this street. So I have shown you the street, but the details of the street Allah has given you and has bestowed you mind and intellect to you yourself to dissect it and go and find the place itself. Mm-hmm. So Islam tells you all the, let's say, general guidelines.
Yes.
And the rest, to the extent that they are available, for example, in the teachings of Ahlul Bayt or the Mufassirin or interpreters of Islam.
Yes.
So that's good. To the extent that they are not available, there are some, let's say, through the intellect that Allah bestowed you, can find a way. But in general, we want to say, in general, Islam shows you the way to worship in the right manner, to bring you that spiritual ecstasy. Islam tells you what's your role and what are your needs and demands in a social life with your society. How to establish and set up a just government. What is the best model of government? And all the, let's say, affairs and issues that a person needs in his life or his society.
More than that, I think Sayyid Mohsen Islam very much invites the people to a kind of Tawhidi lifestyle or monotheistic lifestyle, taking out human beings from the center of the world and put Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala instead of that. And this is what makes, I think, the religion of Islam very much different from the previous, maybe distorted or disformed pictures of the religions especially Christianity and Judaism. And that's why I believe that Islam, as a Tawhidi lifestyle guidance and guidebook for the people all around the world, can be helpful even today in the 21st century. But this is really a big question, because when we talk about the religion, some people might expect their religion to answer any type of doubt and question of them in their lives. Is it at all right, this is my same question for you, to expect a religion to solve all your problems all of a sudden? Because I sometimes think that the people around the world look at the religion as a type of prescription, as a type of tranquilizer for your own, we can say, pains and we can say sickness of mind or something like that in your life. Is it at all right to look at the religion this way?
Well, as a whole, if we just want to see religion in this context only and only, this is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because religion is answerable to other things as well, to the social aspect of the human life, to the economical aspect of the human life, to the individual aspect of the human life. What religion actually does is basically it gives you formulas. That's how I want to basically express the religion. And if we follow those formulas, we will have a successful life. And these issues which you're like saying, like we are trying to look our personal issues within the religion, their solutions. If we follow these formulas, yes, we will get those solutions. But if we are not following the formulas which are set by the religion, I'm using this term formula basically.
Yes.
Because religion explains everything, but in the terms of a specific, you know, there is a, you know, we can say like rules and the formulas that we need to follow. So the main thing is whether when we are looking for the for a solution from the religion side, or we think that the religion should give me the solution for this, you know,
this and that problem.
This and that problem.
Yes.
Am I following the religion truly or not? Mm-hmm. That's the first question. Because,
yes,
you know, if you're not following all the rules, then obviously you will lack in something.
Okay.
So from the day one till the day end, am I following and step by step everything which is said by the religion, and still I'm in the problems?
Yes.
Or no? I'm not just following the religion, but I want my solutions from the religion.
Okay.
There's two different aspects.
That's right.
Which
We cannot say that directly we can find the answer to our problems in the religion of Islam, but there are some sets of guidelines.
We can.
I do want to say some people, in order to find the answer to a specific problem, refer to the textbooks of Islam or ulama, okay? This is not the way. There are some sets of guidelines,
yes,
over there. If you follow them properly, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will give you a kind of power and talent to solve your problem automatically.
It's both ways. It's not like we cannot say like it's two ways of a coin, two sides of a same coin. Basically, yes, the Quran, the ulama, the religion itself has answers for the problems of the people as an individual person and as an social person.
Yes.
So it has, because, you know, one of the problems is nowadays, the people want to impose religion to be, especially Islam, to be something which is for individuals only.
Okay.
And it does not answer the
collective,
social or
yes,
collective,
yes,
we can say, issues. It's not answerable to them.
Okay.
Whereas a religion has both aspects. It's
yes,
not like capitalism and socialism.
Yeah.
You know, there are two different things.
They are
not
even religions.
Yeah. I know they're not religion, but
yes,
they try to compare, because they're serving, they claim,
yes,
that they're serving at a social level, at
yes,
the big level. So Islam do not have that capacity. Therefore, they
that's
try
right,
to compare both things, whereas both of them are the two extreme ways.
Right.
One is extremely towards individualism,
yes,
which gives the freedom fear for everything. The socialism is talking about the, you know, the ownership of just the government and people do not have any right. Whereas Islam is, we say, a middle way,
yes,
which gives importance to the individual and the social both. And it talks about both
that's
parts.
Right.
So
there is
the religion
yes,
itself, the Islam itself,
yes,
gives the answer to the
yes,
individual's questions as well.
Yes.
There's, if someone has a problem individual,
mm-hmm,
there is definitely an answer for
okay,
it.
I just want to add one more
okay,
question, because I think the time is almost over, if I'm not mistaken.
We've got about 4 or 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I think the all these introduction that we have been talking about within this couple of sessions actually has a reason that we are talking about the comprehensiveness of Islam. So as I actually said something, but it was left incomplete. There was a recent, let's say, crawling doubt inside the Islamic Ummah that wants to say that Islam is not a comprehensive religion. So that's why we are talking, and I have actually selected such a topic to discuss and to talk about. And this, I think it's a good time for this to talk about. And actually, it has affected different areas of our, let's say, human sciences. These introductions actually want to lead towards a very important discussion that actually was influenced by political and material powers to say that Islam is not comprehensive. And it has actually happened in this recent century. So we are going to start talking about the comprehensiveness of Islam, that we want to prove that Islam is a comprehensive religion, and as it was taken for granted by earlier, let's say, Islamic communities. So the reason is that due to the, let's say, the attack of such, let's say, opposing viewpoints, we are going to have such discussion. So inshallah, hopefully we start talking about the ways that these views started to penetrate in Islamic Ummah, and the roots, and then inshallah the way to actually cope with such.
I think one important theoretical challenge and problem is that, especially in the modern century, we are comparing the religion with the theories.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the different movements, whether it be economic, industrial, political, something like that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then we expect the religion of Islam to have the same answers as they have. Of course, the religion of Islam is comprehensive and has answers to them, but the question is that comparing these two, I mean, a religion with a thought or a school of thought, I think is very much wrong.
This is wrong. Exactly.
And at the same time, in the 21st century, where the human being is at the center of everything and the deity or divinity is out, then giving power to the materialistic powers in the world and taking out religion out of your life will automatically bring some doubts to the minds of the people. That is a religion of Islam or religion, one of any monotheistic religion, practical in the 21st century or not? Mm-hmm. These are some of the, I think, mismatches or misunderstandings about the religions that the people might have. And that is because of the power of the media or some secular movements that are working on that.
Very true. That's why actually they have changed it from, for example, let's say a commonly doubt into a, let's say, academic or professional way of presentation of such viewpoints.
Okay.
So that's why they started to theorize such crawling ideas inside the Islamic Ummah. That, I think, needs to be discussed in next sessions.
Not only the Islamic Ummah, but all the believers around the world now are facing such challenges in their mind. But I think that religion has its own place, you know, a strong place. And maybe sometime, someday, their opposition will not get into the right answer, and the people might understand the better position of the religion in their lives better than the previous generations or something like that. Because sometimes, you know, when you want to theorize an opposition or a challenge against a religion like Islam, on that time you yourself are not able to answer the questions of the people.
Mm-hmm.
So Islam says, I got the answer for that, and the people get into that way. As we could see, so many of the conversion of the people into the religion of Islam nowadays in the world based on intellect are the exact reason for that. Okay, we have to discuss this topic, I mean, more about the comprehensiveness of the religion of Islam and the criteria why we call it the most comprehensive one based on the thoughts and the speeches of the leader of the Muslim Ummah, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. Inshallah, coming session of the program. But thank you very much, Brother Ali and Sayyid Muslim, for this episode.
Thanks, you're welcome.
And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to us. You are listening to Viewpoints on IRIB English Radio. For more information, Visit our website at parstoday.com/Ian Call of Islam page. Also, our YouTube channel and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
The same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I when I have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know that amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong in a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
From the very heart of evergreen forests, under the starry sky of the desert, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains. Closer, Iran.
Hello, I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. Kettle whistling. Well, I think this is one of the relaxing sounds at home. Two teaspoons of loose tea in the teapot. Then hot water. Now I put the teapot on the kettle and let the tea be brewed up on a low burner stove. Nothing is more enjoyable than a calm home. One of the relaxing factors for a home is the architecture. Architecture is a type of art which has been of much importance since very past times. In the history of art, many buildings have been built around the world which shine like glittering gems. Today we are going to visit one of these buildings, Saray Roshan, located in the capital city of Tehran. Saray Roshan is the name of a beautiful building in Tehran which has attracted many visitors. The building was built in 1932. Regarding its history and architecture, this building is very valuable. Saray Roshan is one of the first commercial centers of old Tehran and is located in the middle of Nasser Khosrow Street near Marvi Ali. The architecture of Saray Roshan is inspired by Gothic architecture. This building was damaged after a period of time, but it was repaired beautifully by the well-known Iranian architect Kamran Safomanesh about three decades ago. In this building, The combination of Iranian and European elements of architecture are used. The decorations of pillars and statues of the building are inspired by Baroque architecture in Europe. Ahura Mazda design, which is the symbol of Achaemenid era, and the traditional tile works, which are the symbols of Islamic Iranian art, are used in this building. I am now at Nasser Khosrow Street. This street is one of the crowded streets of Tehran. It's not a long way to Saray Roshan, and I hope that my destination be less crowded so that you could hear my voice better. I am now next to Saray Roshan. Here is one of the earliest commercial centers of old Tehran. This place used to be a busy place, yet today is not booming as before. Nowadays, Saray Roshan consists of some shops and a big yard. There is a very big basement in this market, which is being used as a place for storing goods. Let me get a little closer to this structure in order to watch its beauties. I am now in front of the magnificent entrance of Saray Roshan. The balconies and tall pillars of this mansion are among the aesthetic elements of this building. Oh, look. On top of the wall, there are statues of angels. How beautiful! Just beneath the statues of angels, which are the symbols of European architecture, there is Ahura Mazda design. And below it, there is a big window. And in front of the window, there is a beautiful balcony. Six windows are situated next to this window symmetrically. Over and below the windows are decorated with beautiful blue Iranian tiles. Oh, this building is very beautiful. Some of the designs in Saray Roshan building include winged sun, winged bodies, column capitals with beautiful decorations, and colorful attractive designs, which I can hardly describe them. If you happen to travel to Tehran, surely visit Saray Roshan and enjoy its beauties.
Till next time, goodbye.
Our Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave radio, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is your host Musa Al-Bahadali and you are now listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program we discuss problems, issues and other relevant questions parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of their children. As usual, all of the answers provided in this program are based upon the holy book of the Quran and upon the narrations of the Prophet and of the household of the Prophet, peace be upon them all. Joining us in the studio is a dear friend and guest speaker, Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi, who is an Islamic researcher at the Seminary of Qum. Dear Sayyid, I welcome you and Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaykum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us, dear Sayyid. Today we'll be continuing what we have been discussing last time about the obstacles we face as parents when raising our children, how we can identify these obstacles that prevent us from becoming exemplary parents, and how we can solve them. Last we spoke about, for example, how some parents have a false sense of dignity and honor, where they demand respect through fear. We also mentioned another aspect of parents being too lenient when giving to their children, not out of love, but out of not caring, and how that potentially may damage the children's perspective and behavior by making them, for example, entitled and arrogant. Dear Sayyid, please teach us what other obstacles we may face when we want to become exemplary and outstanding parents.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجه. Another obstacle that we need to get over as parents, and something this is universal as well, this is not just you know, one particular people over other, and that is issuing a state of emergency in the family. Now right. What do I mean by this? That sometimes me, you, and the parents, when we have, for example, a travel trip, or we want to go out,
right?
Or we having a guest coming over,
some or social experience.
Yeah, so we doing something, and then or exams time,
right.
You see, there's a sense of panic. Like the family goes under an emergency,
right.
Emergency time. So okay, so now we want to travel, and you see the parents, they get into a panic mode, where it puts so much stress on the children. Okay,
right.
Okay, so we have to go. The plane's gonna leave. Did you start? And then you know the mother, the father, each one starts screaming. I've seen this many times, right? Many, many times I've seen this. Or they want to go to a trip, for example. They go out. Or even sometimes when you have a guest, they coming, this, that.
Something that's supposed to be
so
fun.
So much pressure
right.
on the children. And this is what I call, you know, initiating a state of emergency in the house.
Right.
Now, this kind of sense of emergency in the house puts so much strain and so much pressure on the child mentally.
Right.
And that's not required. Sometimes people say, I hate to travel because of how my parents made it, right?
Right.
Constant. So I'm saying, you know what? Do the Islamic thing. Pre-organize. You know,
right.
If you have travel tomorrow, today, pack your bags, get ready. This is what I do, me personally. Like, I pack everything and I'm like, okay, tomorrow I just wake up, have a shower, and I'm out. I got nothing to worry about. So have that time, organize your time correctly, and don't put the pressure on the kid. If someone is coming, it's not a big deal. You know, go do it. You clean the house, do whatever
right.
is required,
right.
and don't turn it into a mess. If you want to go out to the park, it's you know, so you need to what? Do not take that into an emergency. Just deal with it naturally.
And with that, dear Sayyid, we'll be going on a quick break.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Today we are discussing obstacles we may face when raising our children and how to identify them and solve them. Dear Sayyid, please continue the discussion.
Another thing we do as parents is that when we go outside, another obstacle is that we don't give our sons and our daughters and our kids enough time to be with us. Now, kids themselves, they need plenty of time for us to talk with them and play with them. So they want us to be constantly with them,
right.
joking, talking, and take them with us when we go outside. Now, taking them with us outside is a very important part of them growing up. in order for them to be social extroverts, learn from social events, learn from people, see the outside world, they need to be with us. So sometimes you see the father goes by himself, the mother goes by herself, and they leave the kids with either parent,
right?
And they leave the children, or sometimes they take the children, they leave them at someone else's house, and they can go. Okay. No, I say why. Take the kids with you. At least they're spending time with you. By the time you go out and you go visit people, what have you, you come back tired, you go to sleep, and the child doesn't even get to talk to you or see you. So sometimes even the trip itself from your house to someone else's house, that itself,
it's
an experience. You get together, you talk, sometimes funny things happen.
Right.
I don't know. This is with me, for example, when I go out, I take kids with me. On the way, I pull over, get them ice cream, do something with them. You know, since I'm going from A to B, might as well pass through McDonald's, KFC, what have you. Just
make
get
it
them
fun.
An ice cream. You know?
Yeah, right.
That's something they like. And it turns out to be a fun field for them, fun trip for them. They feel
enjoyable
good.
Field trip.
Yeah.
Right.
And you get to bond with your kids and you get to laugh and smile. So why not?
I dare say, some say it is too stressful to take their kids with them and going out shopping or like that. What do we say to...
It is stressful because we make it stressful.
Right.
See, it's all has to do with your mentality. For example, I take my kids with me. Sometimes me and my wife, we take the kids and we go to one of these mega marts.
Right.
And it's a mega mart. That's the whole name. It's a mega mart. It's huge.
It's
right?
A supermarket. A huge supermarket.
A huge supermarket. So I'm saying... So my wife is constantly like, come here. I'm like, you know what? Let them do whatever they want.
Right, yeah.
What else? I mean, what are they going to do, right? They're just going to go around, check out things. If something they like, they will say, I want to buy this. If they don't like it, they're just going to leave.
Right.
What else can they do? Then it's not like they're going to break the items and destroy the items. They're not, in this age. No, they're just going to go around. I'm like, let them. I was like, I might lose them. I'm like, no, you won't lose them. You'll find them. They will find you.
Right.
If they get lost, they'll go to the counter, and the counter they'll call your name, and you'll hear your name in the speakers, and you go collect your kids.
Or just follow them, but don't say anything.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm saying, relax, chill, let them be. Don't try to overstress. So sometimes, we put this idea in our heads that, if I don't, it's going to be very stressful.
Right.
You stress yourself by yourself.
Right. And with that, let's go on a quick break.
The Prophet ﷺ said, honor your children and teach them good manners.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Today we are discussing how to identify the obstacles we may face when raising our children and how to solve them. Dear Sayyid, please pick up where you left off.
All right, so I'm saying that the kids need to have time with their parents.
Right.
And at the same time having that, we should not raise our children in a way where they do only a little bit of effort. Okay, so sometimes I expect my kids just to do something very small, and I'm like, oh yeah, it's okay, now that you can go, right? So now if he's for example with the studies, especially now, came online, sometimes there are work to be done online, right? So I'm like, okay, are you done this? That's all right, leave the rest, you don't need to go extra, get the book and do this on paper. No, that's okay, you've done that. So we expect with them less effort and we give them less time. So that creates a very imbalance in the child.
It's an unhealthy dynamic.
Yeah, it's very imbalanced. So the child hardly gets to see you. When he sees you, you brush him off or something. No, it's okay, you've done this. Go with it. That also acts as an obstacle at the parents, for the parents and for the educators, when it comes to trying to become the best they are in their fields.
Right.
So we're saying no. You need to make sure that you maintain the balance. You give them enough time. Take them with you wherever you want. and also give them the proper effort that's required of them. Okay.
Right.
So if they are required to do certain tasks, you have to make sure that they fill it up. So sometimes I, with my kids, I'm like, and like, okay, it's like, I done this. I'm like, no, you have to finish it. It's like, okay, so my son always tries to bargain with me. He's like, okay, can I go like for 5 minutes and come back? I'm like, no, no 5 minutes. That needs to be done now. You finish the entire thing, then you go.
Right.
If I give you 5 minutes, either you'll never come back,
right,
or when you come back, you'll never finish it because now you're just, you know, out,
too
like
demotivated,
no,
out
exactly.
of it. Right.
I'm like, no, you have to do it right now. You have to finish everything off. I'll let you go.
Right.
If you want to drag it, if you want to just keep nagging, and I'm like, you're just wasting your own time.
Right, yeah.
Okay, you
yeah.
can just put your mind into it, just do it, and get away with it.
That's a life lesson in itself.
Yeah, yeah.
Finish
so
what you've started.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So, but if I say, no, no, it's okay. Okay, you've done like 5% of the work, 10% of
no
the
worries.
Work.
No
it's
problem.
Okay, go have a break, do whatever, and then you can come back. No, so
right.
we need to make sure that the right effort has been done by the kids, and we have given them the right time as well.
Right.
So the more time we spend with our kids, the more and the closer, the more affection they will become with us. And then if you ask them for something, if you ask them to put more effort into their work, obviously they would listen. Why? Because
right.
now we have, you know,
a good,
a
strong
very
bond.
Yeah, a very love relationship, a very strong bond. You're bonding as parents and as children. And that's rarely we see that, you know, in people. Now, obviously, it's, you know, depending on the society that you're in,
right,
depending
yeah.
on where you come from in the world.
Right.
So some cultures adopt this kind of method where they're very in touch with their children. They have this special bond. And some societies, they're very far away.
Right.
Obviously, for whatever reasons that we don't want to mention. So we're saying this is an obstacle that needs to be removed by the parents.
And on that note, dear Saeed, we must unfortunately end today's program. I thank you for your time and for your insightful knowledge. I also thank the dear listeners for tuning in. If the dear listeners have any questions or other relevant comments and feedback, please contact us at our email, englishradio@irib.ir. You can also visit our website, parstoday.com. Alternatively, you can also find us on the various social media accounts we have on YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter under the call handle of Call of Islam Radio. Thank you for tuning in. Until next time, fi amanillah.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
Nearly 200 state members, Interpol is the only police authority that can claim to span the five continents. Its chief mission is to help arrest fugitive criminals and therefore contribute towards a safer world. However, with its new president at the helm, an Emirati security official accused of grave breaches of human rights, this international body ushers in a dangerous era where despotic regimes with deep pockets are being able to dictate international policing.
Thank you.
Inspector General of the UAE's Interior Ministry, Ahmed Nasser Al-Raisi, will serve a 4-year term at Interpol after winning a vote in Turkey on November 25. His candidacy was roundly condemned by a wide range of individuals and institutions.
So his first reaction when I heard he want to become a president of Interpol, it was shocked. I didn't believe that because, you know, he had direct responsible for my case on my colleague from Kuala as well. And for me, it was a huge impact on my life, and it's absolutely changed my life to upside down.
A few days before the election, three European Parliament members sent a letter to European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen, warning the election of General Al-Raisi would undermine the mission and reputation of Interpol and severely affect the ability of the organization to carry out its mission effectively.
The UAE has been attempting to occupy, has been basically occupying the southern Yemeni island of Socotra since at least 2018, but also prepping to do that essentially in the decades prior, using it essentially as an illegal military base. And also that year, there have been a lot of discoveries of torture and sexual abuse in prisons by Emirati guards against Yemeni prisoners too. So this is just an attempt for the Emirates to escape accountability and escape any just prosecution that should be brought onto it.
Al-Raisi's appointment follows generous, albeit suspicious, funding by the UAE for the body. Back in 2017, when the UAE's statutory contribution was a bit more than 230,000 euros, the country made a 50 million euro donation to the Interpol Foundation for a Safer World, an organization which lobbies governments and companies to support Interpol's work.
In 2017 specifically, the UAE pledged or donated about 50 million to 7 different agencies within Interpol, with around 10 million pledged or donated in 2019. So it's obvious that they're bribing the France-based agency to not investigate its own role or to basically hush up any accusations that are continuously brought up against the UAE in seeking accountability against its actions.
Last year, when it was still hard to imagine a man of poor human rights record as the head of Interpol, the Telegraph revealed that the Emirati general was a shoo-in for the role, a bold claim that finally came true. Critics consider Al-Raisi's election as a big soft power victory for Abu Dhabi at the expense of Interpol's own reputation. In the words of U.S. Senator Roger Wicker, Interpol has become a tool in the hands of despots and crooks who seek to punish dissidents and political opponents in an effort to turn other countries' law enforcement against the rule of law. Under Al-Raisi's supervision, Abu Dhabi and Dubai became two of the world's most surveilled cities, which was accompanied by a crackdown on domestic criticism and dissent. Internationally speaking, Al-Raisi's name is glued to a number of infamous cases, above all the case of Matthew Hedges, a British citizen. The new president of Interpol is accused of supervising the torture of Hedges when he was imprisoned in the UAE for nearly 7 months in 2018 on false charges of espionage during a study trip. Matthew says during his detention, he was beaten up, electrocuted, denied food and water, and given a cocktail of high-strength drugs to combat his panic attacks and depression. He was also reportedly forced to sign a confession in Arabic, a language he did not know.
I see the consequences so much as we see the consequences of Saudia being elected to chair the Human Rights Council in 2015. This is a act that basically proves that within these European centered organizations that it's ultimately money and capital and the geopolitical alliance with the West and with Israel that determines what these what kinds of acts of brutality can be carried out without impunity, essentially, and that essentially justice can be bought off within these organizations.
In reaction to al-Raisi's recent election, Hedges tweeted, "The inevitable election of Raisi to Interpol presidency is a serious attack on the values it stands for. His complicity in systematic torture and abuse is legitimized through Interpol and gives a green light to other authoritarian states that they can act without impunity." Interpol is entitled to issue red notices, a call by one country for the arrest of individuals in another. Yet the body has often been accused of letting red notices to be misused by autocratic states to track down dissidents abroad. David Calvert-Smith, the former director of public prosecutions for England and Wales, says the UAE has misused the red notice system both for minor offenses and most importantly for political gain against those seen as a threat to the regime, concluding al-Raisi is unsuitable for the presidency.
Well, it allows him to cover up his previous acts of torture that he's known to have committed. And also, outside of just Raisi, but the UAE security apparatus, military apparatus in general, can continue its war crimes against Yemenis and continue to occupy Yemen and especially the island of Socotra that I mentioned that the UAE, since especially since 2017, 2018, but even decades prior, has been preferring to use as its military base. So essentially, this is like a way in which they're trying to buy their way out of any like any prosecution that should be dealt that they should be dealt with.
Therefore, al-Raisi's election reveals little appetite, if any, for Interpol member states to reform the red notice system. Nabhan al-Hanshi, head of ALQSD for Human Rights, believes Raisi's election sends a chilling message that Interpol has abandoned its human rights commitments. This raises fears that existing concerns about the agency, including the use of politically motivated red notices by abusive states, will worsen. The election of the notorious Emirati general as the head of Interpol is a warning to the international community that no one is immune from the abuse of Interpol and authoritarian regimes. Once used in the hunt for fugitive criminals, Interpol might drastically, though invisibly, change course in the years to come.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illa Allah. Allahu ya Allah wallahu akbar.
This is a short part of some articles about Imam Khomeini's point of view on religion and politics. Imam Khomeini, peace be upon him, by ruling historical events and having a thorough knowledge of history of Islam and likewise modern history of Iran and the world, has undertaken to find the causes of weakness and decadence of Muslims.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to Spring of Truth. I'm your host, Abdullah Al-Musawi, and we're looking at some of the points and views of Imam Al-Khumayni, Rahmatullahi alayhi. Among the things that he said to scholars from Qum when he was delivering a speech, he said that you should not limit the pulpit to only advocating the tears and the sadness and sorrows of Karbala. But in fact, there are other aspects that need to be highlighted. Among the things that Imam Khomeini said, you need to highlight the points and aspects, the spiritual aspects of the martyrdom of Karbala, which is something that me and you need in our daily life. Ibadah itself, worship to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, is just one part. That's just the vehicle. But we need the driver. The driver is the spirit of a person. Without that driver, that vehicle would not move. So what happens is that sometimes we become very ritualistic. We stay with just fasting and reading Quran and doing all these things which are required, which are needed. But at the same time, there has to be a spiritual growth. We have to try to fly with our spirits and reach the realms of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, become closer to Him.
Ya Rabbana, salli ala.
If we stay ritualistic, that will not get us anywhere. So we have to work body, mind, and soul, as we say. So spirituality is a very important aspect in a person's life. As preachers, as advocates of Islam, we need to make sure that we not only talk to them about akhlaq, we not only talk to them about morals and ethics, or politics, or this and that, but also we need to make sure that we try to elevate their spirituality, that we try to take them to a higher level. We try to force this idea and this notion of spirituality to them. Because people in this world and in this era that we live in, we have become very materialistic. We only care about what we eat, where we live, what we drive, what we have. We became consumed by the matter that is around us. We are no longer attached to the realm of spirituality. We are disconnected because of how much connected we are to the material world. This point, this aspect, need to be highlighted on the pulpit. People need to be aware of it, and people need to move towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala through experiencing that realm and that aspect of spirituality.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
IRIB English Radio.